Factus Radio. Factus Radio. FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
Now we've got our second guest in.
For we today. Have. We have the lovely Martha.
Martha James from Plan Research. Good afternoon, Martha.
Hello.
So thank you for coming in. Now, Plan Research, it's about planning applications and things, isn't it? It's the sort of stuff you do.
It is absolutely about planning applications and stuff.
So what is it you actually do?
I am a planning consultant, and I work for developers or people who want to build houses, or I represent residents who want to comment on planning applications.
Okay, so you could be on both sides of a planning, or either side, not necessarily both sides at the same time, but either side.
Definitely not at the same time, but I am on either side on different applications.
Okay, so let's say I wanted to build a new house on a plot of land I happen to own. You'd be the person to go to get it all done for me.
Absolutely, and actually, before you even buy the land or think about buying the land, it's always best to speak to a planner, because I meet lots of people who say, hey, this will be brilliant, this is my dream. And then I come along and say, really, you're never going to get planning permission for here, and it gets very painful.
So it's a reality check, if you like.
Yeah.
Mm. So why would that be if I'd bought X plot of land and I thought, oh, I'm going to build my nice bungalow here, and you go, oh, you won't get planning permission. What reasons would there be for not getting planning permission?
Well, normally the reason is, the problems will be that they're in the middle of the countryside and the council doesn't like to grant planning permission for houses in the countryside, mm-hmm. or they've got road issues or drainage issues or ecology issues. Some of those things can be overcome. Mm-hmm. I've got planning permission for people who for houses in the countryside, but some of them are very, very difficult to overcome, and some of them are very expensive.
Okay, that makes sense. So if you've got some you've got some land you might be thinking of buying, ask Martha first. Is the good thing to do.
And yes.
You say, realistically, you're not going to get anywhere with
it. So you won't be wasting your money.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, I often will go out and have a look at a site without any charge at all, just to see, first of all, so that people are really not wasting their money. Mm. Because I don't like to, you know, lead people on. I like them to be sure and comfortable, from the start.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
That makes absolute sense. I mean, I'll be honest, Martha helped us with the planning permission for our transmitter mast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in fact, she did the whole thing, which is a kind of one-stop shop effort, because when we applied for planning permission for all kinds of things, we wanted some for our garden, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
And they want drawings, and they want this plan, and they want that thing, and it gets out of hand. Whereas if you go and see someone like Martha, you say, sort this out for me, please, and she knows where to get the drawings done and how they should be presented, yeah, and all the rest of it. So,
well, the other thing is that sometimes the council can ask for things that, you know, flummox the person, or is actually unnecessary. They're just actually maybe misunderstanding your application.
And so your background is what?
I went to university and did a town planning degree, and then I graduated in town planning. I worked, first of all, for Haringey Council as a planning enforcement officer. Mm. And then I moved to the Isle of Wight and worked in planning policy. And then I worked for the Royal Town Planning Institute. And then I set up on my own.
Mm.
And I've worked on my own since about 2010.
Ah. Okay. So
what got you interested in planning in the first place to go off to university?
That's very funny, actually, because it's my dad to blame. Mm-hmm. You know when you're a teenager and you never listen to your dad?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was one of the moments I did listen to my dad.
So it's his fault.
It is. I was going to do a geography degree because I really loved geography at school. And my dad said to me, he looked over the newspaper and he said, do you want to be a teacher? And I said, no. And he said, go and look for something else. Go and look for another course then. So I went into the library at my college and they had this book called Geography Degrees. And I saw in this book that they said that one of the jobs you could do was town planning. And it really sort of inspired me, the idea that, you could really shape a place, you could help people get housing and all those things. Everything that's built really is normally around planning.
Okay. That's given you, you're very keen, you're enthusiastic about getting things done properly and planning things that fit with a local scene, as it were.
Oh yes, anyone who knows me knows I'm a bit of a planning nerd, but I also really, really love planning. But really, most important to me is getting the right planning thing. If anyone objects to any of my planning applications, I never take it personally. I want the right thing in the right place.
Mm, okay, that's fair enough. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a track into the break. You're listening to Vectis Radio, FM 104.6 and online with me, Kelvin.
And me, Maggie.
And it's the Tuesday afternoon show. We've still got Martha James. Martha, thank you for still being here.
Thank you.
And putting up with us. Now, we're going to ask you a question, a historical question. You deal with planning permission issues, but when did planning permission actually start? Because it wasn't always there, was it?
Oh, no. You only have to look at the ribbon development that you see along most roads, where you see houses along the edge of the road, to know that planning permission definitely didn't always exist. So from 1945, the government brought in planning, modern planning as we know it, to allow mass house building. And that's why in planning legislation, as much as residents, when they're objecting to applications, get annoyed, the reason planning is a presumption in favour of development.
Oh, okay. That's interesting, because where I was born and brought up basically was a state that was built after the Second World War from about 1947 onwards. And Google Earth has got a picture of the place before it was built, and it's basically all fields, with the road that I lived on was the only bit that's recognisable. And that was all part of the planning thing, was it, to get these estates up?
You know, all the new towns, all of those was about replacing slums with, you know, nice new houses for families. It was part of the improvements.
So it's like Harlow and Basildon.
Basingstoke.
Milton Keynes.
Milton Keynes.
Yes.
Yes, I remember Milton Keynes being announced. I'm that old. I remember them saying they're going to build a new town at Milton Keynes. But Harlow and Basildon, I remember being built because I lived in that kind of area.
So is it a glamorous job, or do you end up walking around in the mud?
Oh, it's far from glamorous. I spend a lot of time falling in trenches, clambering through hedges. When I was an enforcement officer, I used to be chased by dogs ever such a lot.
You didn't take it personally, then?
No, no. That's actually the thing you really have to do with this job. You've got to keep a sort of a level head and a strong sense of humour. You can't, you know, take it all, you know, can't get upset.
No, okay. So when you say clambering around fields, you're looking for things that might aid or otherwise hinder your client's permission that they're seeking.
Yes, so I never walk around in a luminous vest, because if I do, people come and ask me straight away what I'm doing. I will walk around a field. My son says that I go to fields, I kick a few stones around, and then I walk away, and then I've got a plan in my mind about how we can get, you know, the client's permission.
And is he right?
No.
So I mentioned earlier on you helped us get planning permission for the transmitter mast for FM 104.6, and for that we are grateful. But was that an unusual project for you?
Oh, completely unusual. So there was a load of really good things that I knew that you would get approval, you know, why you would get approval for that, and I was looking at the location, the other buildings that are around, you know, how you know, the community benefits for having the radio station on FM, all those things played a part in getting it. But I've never applied for planning permission for a mast. But if they're, you know, when you want to do your next mast, and hopefully that will be in the West White, then I'll glad.
I'll talk to you about that off air. I've got some ideas. Rather like you, I've got things that I'd like to get done, and they depend on not just planning permission, but other statutory bodies that we have to. But
no, but it's interesting you're saying that it would affect the community, the mast.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's not strictly a planning matter, no. A material consideration, but it is part of the case that you lay out when you're submitting a planning application. So within an application, I write something called a design and access statement, and in my design and access statements, I lay out the case and explain why. And I know that some parish councils really appreciate that. And I've been told that Freshwater always says that they like the fact that the design and access statements are clear and explain the beginning, the middle and the end, rather than just assuming.
So when you mentioned Freshwater Council, you do have to go through parish councils as well. As well as, now, can they stop a planning application, parish councils, or do they just advise against it?
Oh, well, you know, parish councils are a statutory consultee, so the council will ask them. If they have legitimate planning concerns, of course anyone could have a reason to stop a planning application.
Okay, and then there's other bodies like the CPO, or Council Protection of Rural England.
Yes.
And Natural England is another one, isn't it?
Yeah, Natural England is a government body. Campaign to Protect Rural England is a charity, and they write planning application letters for on the Isle of Wight for all planning applications in the countryside.
Okay, so that's interesting.
And then, intriguing.
Then there's other people. I mean, I seem to recall that people like Southern Water have to be consulted on some things.
Oh, yes, and there's, you know, the Environment Agency. There's all sorts of bodies that are consulted. I did a planning application recently at Ryde School, and Sports England was consulted on that one.
Oh, right, okay, because it involves sport, I presume, in some manner.
It involved a footpath going past a rugby pitch.
Okay.
So that's why they were consulted.
Oh, well, fair enough.
Fair enough.
But stuff that wouldn't ever occur to the average person applying for planning permission for things.
That's why you want a planning consultant.
Absolutely. I mean, even very simple applications, something like a drive, sometimes can need a planning consultant. I worked on a really beautiful listed building in five houses where the person wanted a car access to her house.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds really simple, but it was a very complex application because you weren't allowed to affect the setting of the listed building.
Oh, okay.
And also part of the land that the applicant wanted to use was an agricultural field. So we had to demonstrate that the agricultural field wouldn't be affected.
Yeah, okay. Now, agriculture is an interesting one because I know you quite well from other things that we do, but some of the properties in or in other ways, perhaps across the country, have agricultural restrictions on them
ties,
in some way.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
What's that about to start with?
So, originally, they're houses that are granted planning permission where you wouldn't normally get planning permission for. So, the reason they're granted is because somebody has argued that they were necessary for agriculture. And in the 60s and 70s, there were loads of houses built under the agricultural, you know, under these rules where they put an agricultural occupancy tie. And as farming has shrunk in size and in number of employees, these houses sort of spring up and that you know, there's no new use for them as an agricultural house anymore.
So you have to apply for to get that restriction lifted in some way, and there's presumably a process for that.
There is. You have to demonstrate that it's not needed anymore, or you have to demonstrate that it hasn't been used by an agricultural person for 10 years.
Excellent stuff.
Uh-huh.
What I'd like to do, we've got to get another break in a minute. Can we come back and talk about change of use, things like footpaths and stuff like that?
Of course.
Is that the sort of thing? Would that be of interest, do you think? You listen to Vectors Radio FM 104.6 and, of course, online, vectorsradio.com/listen with me, Kelvin.
And me, Maggie.
And we've still got Martha here.
Good. We have.
Thank you for staying with us, Martha.
Thank you.
Now, one of the things that happens quite a lot in planning, I imagine, is change of use of buildings from sort of barns to houses, shops to accommodation, whatever it is. Is that the sort of thing you can deal with?
Oh, yes. Some barns you can change to residential use with something called a prior notification application. And some changes of use don't require any planning permission at all, but you just need to make sure that you're following the rules. But there are lots of shops that turn to restaurants and things. They require planning permission.
Okay, because that's a change of use from a retail to a food, is it, or something like that?
Well, if you want to get really technical, there's something called the use class order, and that details all the uses within a number system.
Oh,
so
right.
So a shop is an A1 use.
Oh, okay, and then there's different uses for that afterwards. And there's something I know I've heard you speak about called a certificate of lawfulness or something.
Yes, a certificate of lawfulness is something that you can demonstrate that, you know, the thing you want to do is lawful. And the advantage of that is that when you come to sell your house, you've got proof that the action that you built that doesn't technically need planning permission, but that is being built according to the rules.
Oh, okay.
Well, that makes sense, yes. Yeah.
And what happens if you've done something which is you should have had planning permission for, but you haven't got planning permission? But is there a time limit on people telling you that you need to sort that out?
Oh, yes. Well, in relation to buildings, so say you build an extension on your house, it's 4 years.
Yeah.
And in relation to a use, say, for example, you move a caravan onto a piece of agricultural land, that's 10 years.
All right, so it's got to be in there for 10 years, and then it's basically lawful after that time.
Yeah, that's when you can get a certificate of lawfulness.
Oh, well, fair enough.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
What about if you've got a footpath across your garden? Can you block it? Have it blocked?
You can go through a proper procedure and you can have them moved. And in fact, more likely to happen is that if you're a developer and you're applying for planning permission, the council will try and get you to put new footpaths in. And obviously no developer really wants to do that.
No.
But obviously the council do want that. And that's part of when a negotiation with between a planning consultant and the council really comes into its own.
Mm.
It's the sort of the making sure that the council gets what they want, but also my client doesn't give away too much.
Okay, yes. So I mean, if I had a piece of land which you said was okay for a small housing development, you'd try and help me get the maximum number of houses I could within the law on that by making sure the council got what they want out of it as well.
Yes, absolutely. It's sort of making sure that you meet as many expectations of the council and also maximising, you know, the development for your client.
Yes, I mean, there's no doubt that we need more houses on the Isle of Wight, particularly affordable ones, but that's a political question at the end of the day. But you would help people get those sort of requirements into their designs.
Well, part of the problem is that for the government at the moment has decided that they want affordable housing to be paid for by developers.
Hmm.
And as a consequence, that means that we really do have to have more houses if we're going to provide affordable housing.
Hmm.
Hmm. So it's sort of a catch-22. People want to stop housing developments on their back, you know, in their back gardens. But on the other hand, they want their children to have affordable housing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, just to start, a couple of little silly questions. There have been cases where people have needed planning permission to change the colour of their front door. Is that actually a real thing? Or is it...
I imagine that with listed buildings Article 4 area, so that's very specific, but unlikely for most people.
Okay, for most people. I mean, I've come across a listed building that I had was asked to do some work in. Someone said, can you stick a CCTV camera on the front wall? I said, I think you need to talk to a planning consultant first.
Well, absolutely. Those are the sorts of things. I have seen a very funny case on the mainland where somebody painted their house. They lived in a listed building and they painted it a funny stripy colour and then they got into trouble and then they were forced to change it back.
What is a listed building at the end of the day? Is it something that's a special historical interest? Or
oh, yes. Like it's a building that is decided... that it has a special designation and it becomes listed. It has to go through a proper procedure. So there's like grade one, grade two, grade two star.
Okay. So if you, I mean, we need to wrap this up fairly soon in a minute. But if people want to get some advice from you, how do they do that?
They can either email me. Can I give out my email?
Of course you can, yes.
It's martha@planresearch.co.uk.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can call me and my telephone number is 07522 149 285.
07522 149 285.
Yes.
And planresearch.co.uk is the website.
Yep.
And you can find out more there. And you're happy to give advice, initial advice, just say I think I need to come and see it, or I wouldn't go down that path, or whatever.
Absolutely. I, you know, obviously we all have to make a living at the end of the day, but actually just a very quick phone call can normally stop any sort of accidental purchases or actually help somebody make the right choice for themselves.
Yeah, that's good. Well, thank you very much for coming in and giving us that.
Thank you, Martha.
We will.
It's been really interesting.
Really interesting, because people say planning all yawn, but it isn't.
It isn't.
There's loads of it, and we do need it to keep our towns and cities looking reasonably tidy.
Yeah, it's funny, when I was a student and I would say I was doing a town planning degree, people would say town planning and then look at somebody else more glamorous doing like a media studies course. As I've got older, when I go to parties and people say, what do you do as a job? And I say town planning. They're now suddenly really interested.
And I know from other things, you'll say to me sometimes, how they ever got planning permission, that ugly thing there, I don't know.
Yes, because I do think that.
I know you work for developers and that's part of your job, but you do care about how our towns and cities look.
I do.
Which is always comforting to know. Thank you for coming in, Martha. Planresearch.co.uk if you want any more information.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Your station, your community.